It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
Good evening, listener, and welcome back to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. I'm your host, Steve Taylor, here to guide you once again into the places where hope falters and help comes from the wrong direction. Tonight's tale is not about monsters lurking in closets or shadows creeping along your walls. No, what waits for you this evening wears a gentler mask. It arrives soft, warm, promising relief, comfort, even miracles. And when you're desperate enough, you'll take any of those, no matter the cost. Before we wander too far down that road, before we follow the scent of salvation into some place we should never go, I've got a few important updates to share with you. Settle in. We're just getting started. First, the holiday chill isn't the only thing in the air. The Evil Idol 2025 voice acting competition is underway, and the performers are absolutely hungry for your votes. Round 2 continues as we search for the next great voice of terror, and your clicks will decide who claws their way into the top ranks. If you haven't begun casting your votes yet, well, consider this your nudge. You can watch every performance and vote for your favorites on the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights YouTube channel. While you're there, hit subscribe and ring that bell so you never miss a new round, a new performance, or a new scare. New frights drop every week, and trust me, they're worth your nightmares. Also, something special is coming your way over the next couple of months. In upcoming episodes, we'll be giving our Evil Idol Round 2 contestants room to shine, featuring them in some of our newest full-cast immersive productions created exclusively for this very show. Stay tuned. You won't want to miss what's coming. While you're in a supportive mood, a quick favor. Follow the show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening right now. And if you're enjoying what we do, leave us a 5-star review rating and a short review. Your support helps new listeners find their way into our little family of darkness. And if you'd like even deeper cuts, ad-free episodes, early releases, exclusive bonus tales, and access to our full growing archive, consider becoming a supporter at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com. Membership started just $7.99 a month with discounted annual plans. Think of it as upgrading your nightmares. Finally, don't forget to join us across social media, Facebook, X, Instagram, and TikTok, where we share announcements, behind-the-scenes surprises, and daily doses of dread. Now, if you're ready, let's take a closer look at what happens when comfort comes calling and a miracle steps across your threshold with all the temptation that brings. Our feature presentation tonight comes from an author whose work needs no introduction among fans of atmospheric dread, Craig Groeschek. In his story, we follow a struggling father who stumbles upon something strange in the woods, something warm, helpless, and impossibly alive, a creature that shouldn't exist, a creature that seems to offer the one gift he needs most, hope. Bringing this story to life is Nicholas Goroff, with additional voices by Katie Otten, and sound design and production from Aaron Sawicki, whose work tonight might leave you feeling a little less certain about the things that lurk just out of sight, and the price they may quietly demand. So settle in, dim your lights, and listen closely to the quiet, careful sounds of something waking up beneath your feet. Something patient. Something hungry. From author Craig Groeschel, we present Benefactor.
Part 1. Brad Carter used to like the woods. When he was a kid, the woods had been a place his father trusted him with. A patch of county land past the subdivision, more scrub than forest, full of deer trails and beer cans. Back then, it had felt endless. Back then, he'd believed that if you walked far enough, you'd come out somewhere better. Now he was 36, recently divorced and out of excuses. His daughter was losing weight and hair and time, and the only thing he seemed to shed was money. Bills piled on the kitchen counter in crooked stacks. Every appointment meant another payment plan. Every payment plan came with interest.
"Take a day,"
the social worker told him, voice gentle and useless.
"You have to recharge, Mr. Carter. For her sake, you need to find some way to cope."
So he'd taken a day. Packed an old backpack with a bottle of water, a bruised apple, and the warped compass he'd found in a junk drawer. He'd driven out to the state park because it was cheap and quiet, and because the brochure in the visitor's center had a picture of a family smiling at a waterfall. He didn't have anything to smile about, but he could still walk. At least there was that. The gravel crunched under his boots as he left the main parking lot behind. The trailhead was marked with a wooden post and a faded map under cloudy plexiglass. A red line traced a loop. A smaller yellow line cut off from it and vanished deeper into green. He told himself he would stick to the red. The first mile was easy. The trail rolled over low hills, the earth packed from years of footsteps. Fallen leaves muted each step. The air smelled of damp earth and the faint sweetness of decaying foliage. Birds flitted from branch to branch, invisible except for sudden flickers. For the first time in months, the silence wasn't the sterile hum of hospital HVAC units. It was real quiet, broken only by the sound of the wind and the occasional tap of a woodpecker. He tried to let his mind go blank, but his thoughts had a way of circling back to the same place. Emily, and by extension, Sarah. He and his ex-wife hadn't been enemies when the marriage failed, just two exhausted parents drifting in opposite directions while the bills and treatments ate away at the center of everything. Sarah worked double shifts at the hospital now, sometimes sleeping in the break room between rotations. She always looked tired when she handed Emily over on Brad's weekends. Hair pulled back, scrubs wrinkled, voice steady, but worn thin. They hadn't spoken about anything real in months. Not about their marriage, not about Emily's prognosis, not about the fear they both carried. But she still texted him reminders about medications, still sent little updates between long shifts, still trusted him with the one thing in the world that mattered. Nowadays, however, he wasn't sure he deserved that trust anymore. He wasn't sure he deserved anything at all. He thought again of Emily in her hospital bed, legs swallowed by a faded blanket with cartoon giraffes, the little plastic bracelet on her wrist, the way she'd smiled when he'd promised her they would go camping again soon, even though he had no idea when that might be possible or if it would be at all. "You shouldn't have promised that," he thought. He followed the red blazes deeper into the park, watching for each mark on the trees. On one oak, the paint had peeled into curling strips, the bright color fading to a dull, tired pink. On another, someone had scratched initials into the bark beneath it. After a while, he realized he hadn't seen a blaze in some time. Brad stopped, turning a slow circle. Trees, leaves, no hikers. No distant hum of the highway. The trail underfoot had narrowed while he wasn't paying attention, turning from a clear path into something less defined. with only a slight depression in the soil, a place where leaves seemed more tamped down than elsewhere. He squinted back the way he'd come. The path behind him looked the same as the one in front. "Nice," he murmured. "Real nice." He took out the compass, balancing it on his palm. The needle drifted lazily, then settled, more or less. He thought about pulling out his phone, then remembered he'd left it on the charger by the couch to avoid work emails and the temptation to check my chart every 10 minutes. It was still mid-afternoon. The sky, visible between the branches, was bright and pale. If he kept moving in a straight line, he'd hit something eventually. A road, a boundary fence, another trail. He picked a direction that felt most downhill and started walking. The land sloped gently at first, then more sharply. Roots snaked out of the soil, catching his boots. He stepped over them, sweating harder. The air cooled as he descended, the light dimming under thicker branches. At the bottom of the slope, the ground leveled off into a shallow basin littered with pine needles and old cones. Here, the woods felt different. He noticed, with a faint tickle of unease, that the birdsong had thinned out. The ordinarily constant din of insects seemed muted. Ahead, something broke the pattern of brown and green. At first, he thought it was a rock. Then he saw the shape was too smooth. He walked closer, boots whispering through the needles. The object lay half buried beside a rotting log nestled in a shallow depression, as if something had dropped it there from a height. It was about as big as a cantaloupe, maybe a little larger. The exposed surface was off-white with a faint pearly sheen, mottled here and there with grayish patches. He crouched down, reaching out with one hand before pulling it back. "What are you doing, Brad?" he thought. The thing didn't resemble any nest or fungus he'd ever seen. It had no cracks or seams. The surface looked unblemished, though, as he watched, he thought he saw it ripple just slightly, as though responding to the air. He told himself it was his imagination. He brushed away loose needles on the side, exposing more of it. The object slid in the bed of mulch with a heavy, damp sound. Instinct made him jerk back again. A small part of his brain, the same part that had convinced him he could find a better price if he called one more insurance rep, whispered, "Valuable. Rare. Maybe it's protected. Maybe there's a reward if you report it." Another, darker part whispered, "Maybe it's a story. Maybe you can tell her about it tonight. Maybe it'll make her smile." "To hell with it," he muttered. He slipped both hands under the object and lifted. It was warm, flesh warm. He almost dropped it, a curse escaping his lips as his fingers sank slightly into the outer layer. There was some give there, like thick rubber layered over something denser. He held it against his chest, cradling the egg-like object like a bowling ball. The faint, shifting sensation under his palms made him think of something turning in its sleep. Brad straightened, the muscles in his arms protesting. The egg, he might as well call it that, was heavier than it looked. He glanced around the basin one last time, half expecting someone to step out from behind a tree and shout at him to stop. No one did. The climb back up the slope was more work with the extra weight. He had to stop twice to catch his breath. Each time he paused, he felt the warmth of the thing through his shirt, steady and constant. He pressed it closer, not wanting to risk dropping it on the rocks. "Look at you," he said under his breath, the way he used to talk to his daughter when she was an infant and wouldn't sleep. "Out here, all on your own, with no one to take care of you. Figures." By the time he found the red blazes again, a small splash of paint on a maple half hidden by a branch, his shoulders ached. He followed the familiar trail back toward the parking lot, the egg growing heavier with each step, or maybe his arms weaker. He told himself firmly, that he would hand it over at the ranger station and let someone else figure out what to do with it. Maybe it was some rare turtle species, or a protected bird, or something from a science program they'd forgotten to remove. Or maybe he'd get scolded and told to put it back. He pictured explaining it to the bored college kid behind the counter, watching their expression change as they realized what he'd brought them. Maybe they'd cut him a check. Perhaps they'd put his name on a plaque. Then he pictured Emily's face if he showed her something strange and mysterious. Her eyes had lost some of their sparkle over the last few months, the treatments grinding them both down. She'd love it, he thought. By the time he reached his car, the decision had already shifted. He opened the trunk and laid the egg gently in a folded moving blanket, wrapping it as best he could to keep it from rolling. Then, for a moment, he just stood there, hands on the lip of the trunk, listening. The parking lot was nearly deserted now. All around him, the wind rattled the leaves. Some were out of sight, a single car door slammed. For just a second, he thought he heard a faint, dull thump from inside the egg. He closed the trunk. The drive home was longer than he remembered, though he'd driven that route 100 times on the way back from the hospital. Kept glancing in the rearview mirror, as if he could see through the seat and the metal, as if he'd catch the shape of the egg, straining to move. The rational part of him laughed at the idea. It's just some animal nest. You're tired. You're hearing things. Still, he took the corners carefully. His duplex sat in a tired row of similar structures, each with a patch of cracked driveway and a narrow strip of lawn. He backed in so that the trunk faced the small concrete stoop, shielded from the street by his own car body. No neighbors were outside. Good. He popped the trunk, checked once more to make sure no one was watching, and lifted the egg. Its warmth had not faded. If anything, it felt a touch hotter. A bead of sweat traced down between his shoulder blades as he carried it inside. The living room smelled faintly of old coffee and the lemon-scented cleaner he'd used that morning, trying to make the place decent before Emily came home for the weekend. He stepped around the sagging couch and headed straight for the narrow door at the back of the hall, the one that led down to the basement. The stairs creaked under his weight. The basement was unfinished, poured concrete floor, exposed beams, the water heater ticking in one corner. A single bulb overhead cast a weak cone of light. Shadows pooled in the corners where the foundation met the floor. Against the far wall, near the furnace, a low square opening led into a crawl space. He'd stored old boxes there once, long before the divorce. Now it held nothing but dust and spiderwebs. Brad knelt by the opening, lowering the egg carefully onto the concrete. He paused, one hand still resting on its curved surface. He didn't know why, but it felt wrong to leave it out in the open, even down here. He fetched an empty plastic storage tub from a shelf, lined it with an old blanket, and set the egg inside. The tub was just large enough. For the first time since he'd picked it up, he felt a small measure of relief. Finally, it was contained and out of sight. "Okay," he said softly. "You stay there. I'll figure this out." The egg didn't respond. Of course it didn't. He slid the tub into the crawl space until it disappeared into the gloom. Then he closed the plywood panel over the opening and stood dusting his hands on his jeans. Upstairs, the kitchen clock ticked steadily. He checked the time. If he left now, he could still make it to the hospital before visiting hours ended. Emily would be expecting him. He hadn't missed a day yet. Brad took one last look at the basement door before he shut it. When he pulled out of the driveway a few minutes later, he did not hear the faint, dry sound from beneath his house, the subtle rasp of the shell against plastic, shifting in the dark. Part 2. When Brad came home that night, the house felt wrong. He shut the door behind him and stood inside the narrow entryway listening. He heard the usual sound of pipes settling, and of the refrigerator humming along with that faint rattle it made when the condenser kicked in. But underneath those familiar noises lay something new, an almost imperceptible tremor in the air. He blamed exhaustion. The hospital's lighting always left his eyes sore. He set his keys on the counter and rubbed his temples. He would check on the egg first, then shower, and maybe, if his body didn't fold in half by then, heat something up and pretend it counted as dinner. When he reached the basement door, he paused a moment before opening it, wondering if this was a good idea, and flicked on the light. He was relieved to find that the basement looked exactly as he'd left it. The same lonely bulb, the same stretch of concrete floor. Crawlspace panel sat flush against the wall. If something had happened down here, it wasn't announcing itself. He descended the steps, each tread creaking under his weight. The concrete felt cooler than usual as he crossed the floor. He knelt, hooked his fingers under the plywood lip, and eased the panel forward. Inside, the plastic storage tub sat in shadow, barely visible. For a heartbeat, nothing moved. Then he saw it. The blanket inside the tub wasn't where he'd left it. It had slumped toward one side, bunched and twisted, as though something beneath it had shifted. He reached in slowly, lifting the edge. The container was empty. Panic flared in his chest, bright, hot, and sudden. He scanned the crawl space, the basement floor, and the corners behind the water heater, finding nothing. There were no tracks, no debris, and no sign that the egg had been dragged or cracked or broken. He lowered the blanket back into the tub. His hands wouldn't stay still. Something might have found it. A raccoon, a possum. Something could have squeezed through a vent or gap in the siding. Maybe the egg had burst, and some scavenger had carried it off in one piece. He closed the crawl space, stood, and exhaled. Fine, he thought. Maybe that was for the best. Maybe he had more sense in losing it than keeping it. He shut off the basement light and went upstairs. He didn't get the chance to wonder about it further because the moment he stepped into the hallway, he heard it. Small noise, high, wet, and irregular. Something straddling the line between crying and laughter, coming from his daughter's room. He reached her door and froze. Emily wasn't here tonight. She'd be at the hospital until Friday. He'd planned his entire day on that arrangement. He wondered briefly if he was losing his mind. Gently, he pushed the door. The hallway light spilled in first, casting a narrow stripe across the carpet and the foot of her small, unmade bed. The rest of the room lay in shadow, shapes half-formed, the dresser, the bookshelf with its rainbow spines, the stuffed animals lined neatly along the windowsill where she liked to keep them watching. And on the floor, near the bed, he detected a faint movement. Emily? He asked, though he knew it couldn't possibly be his daughter. Sweetheart? Something shifted. Then a small head lifted. Not Emily's. His breath stalled in his throat as the shape resolved, something smooth and glistening, a little larger than a football, propped up on slick folds of newborn flesh. The creature blinked at him. Its eyes wide and black as oil, reflecting the hall light in two perfect spheres. It made a soft clicking sound, like a pebble tapping glass. And behind it, sitting cross-legged on the floor in her pajamas, was Emily. Brad's knees nearly gave out. Her cheeks were flushed, her hair looked fuller. She smiled in that easy, unguarded way she hadn't managed in months.
Daddy!
She whispered, as though sharing a secret.
I found something.
Emily looked up at him with wide, uneasy eyes, fear mixed with fascination.
I don't know what it was,
she whispered,
I heard something cracking under the floor, like someone stepping on ice. I thought maybe a pipe broke. It sounded scared.
She pointed toward the broken shell fragments on the carpet.
So I looked, and this little thing was shaking. It looked cold. I thought it needed help.
Her voice carried that earnest, literal honesty children have before the world teaches them doubt. She glanced at the creature again, then back at her father, and drew her knees in slightly, as if suddenly uncertain whether she'd done something wrong.
Daddy, what is it?
She asked. He moved toward her on instinct, afraid to break the spell.
Hold on, Emily. Wait a second, he stammered. Where? How are you? Are you supposed to be here?
Emily, honey, what happened? She shrugged lightly, an action she'd struggled to manage before when fatigue pulled at her muscles.
Mommy brought me early,
she said.
But she had to go back to work.
Brad's stomach tightened. Wait, your mom brought you? Emily nodded.
She said she tried calling you, but your phone was off. They told her it was okay for me to come home earlier, but then she got called in to cover for someone who went home sick. She said she didn't take me because the ward was too busy, so she dropped me off here. She said I should surprise you.
She didn't see the thing, did she? Brad asked.
No, Daddy,
Emily replied. Brad closed his eyes for a moment and sighed in relief. He could picture it perfectly. Sarah already running late, juggling her bag, her pager going off, the frantic shuffle of a hospital short on staff. She probably knocked, probably waited, probably assumed he was just in the shower or out back. And when Emily insisted she was fine, actually felt fine, Sarah must have made the call. It wasn't ideal, not even close. But it wasn't out of character for a woman who hadn't slept a full night in weeks. For now, he was simply excited to see his daughter, who by all accounts looked healthier than she had in weeks. Emily reached down and stroked the creature's back. Brad lurched forward.
Emily, don't!
But the words caught in his throat. He watched, helpless and astonished, as Emily's hand glided over the creature's skin. Instead of recoiling, the thing rolled slightly into the touch, rubbing its cheek against her palm in a gesture startlingly close to affection.
Aw, it's warm,
she said softly.
I think it likes me.
Brad crouched beside her, his eyes scanning her face for any trace of fever or pallor. There was none.
Emily, baby, how do you feel? He asked.
Good.
She said it easily, naturally, as if the last 6 months had never happened.
Really good.
Then, as if sensing his worry, she added,
My legs don't hurt, and my tummy doesn't feel bad. I feel normal.
Her fingers continued gliding over the creature. Brad pressed the back of his hand to her forehead. It was warm, but not feverish. He lifted her chin gently. Her eyes were bright, no longer glassy or dulled by treatment. They looked sharp and alert. Brad's throat tightened.
Emily, he whispered, tell me exactly what happened.
She thought for a moment.
It was making little noises,
she said, pointing to a splintered half shell on the carpet, so clearly broken that it looked almost surgical.
So I picked it up. It was scared. Then it touched me and I felt warm, like someone hugging me from the inside.
She smiled wider.
And then I felt better.
Brad's gaze flicked to the creature again. Its eyes were still trained on Emily. It clicked once, softly, seemingly contented. It had no teeth or claws that he could see. As far as he knew, it posed no threat. It seemed harmless enough. And yet every cell in Brad's body felt caught between wonder and dread. He swallowed hard.
Okay, he said quietly. Okay, let's get you upstairs.
I'm not tired,
she said.
No,
he murmured.
I don't think you are.
Emily paused a moment and then asked.
Daddy?
Yes, sweetheart?
Where did it come from?
I found it on a hike, Brad said. In the woods, it was just an egg.
Emily nodded and smiled that beautiful smile of hers. And in spite of the situation, Brad smiled too.
I love you, Emily, he said.
I love you too, Daddy,
she replied, gently stroking the creature, which responded by nestling closer to her. He called Sarah after Emily fell asleep. She didn't pick up, which wasn't unusual during her nursing shifts. He left a message confirming that he had their daughter and that Emily had definitely surprised him, commented that he'd wished she had at least left him a note, and asked if she had noticed Emily's sudden improvement. He didn't elaborate further or ask if she'd seen the creature. He needed to think before saying anything foolish. He cleaned the bits of shell off the carpet, each shard strangely light, almost fibrous. Then he washed his hands twice. The creature watched him the whole time from Emily's bedside rug, its slick body barely rising and falling with each tiny breath. It hadn't tried to leave the room or shown any fear. It made itself at home, as if it belonged there. Brad stood in the doorway, hand on the frame, staring at it in the dim glow of the nightlight. He should have been panicking or calling someone. Animal control, perhaps, or a wildlife lab. Someone with gloves and gear who knew what to do with things that shouldn't exist. But Emily had color in her cheeks again. She had climbed onto her bed without his help. She'd eaten half a sandwich, like it didn't taste like copper and chemicals. What do you do? He asked himself. When the impossible is the only good thing that's happened to you in months, do you run from it? Or hold on to it with both hands? The creature blinked its glossy eyes. Brad backed into the hallway and closed the door halfway, leaving a gap. He didn't sleep much that night. Instead, he sat in the living room, elbows on his knees, staring at nothing, listening for any sound from upstairs. Occasionally, he heard a soft click. Rather than find it threatening or alarming, it was strangely comfortable. Almost domestic. By dawn, Brad's head felt as if it had been packed with cotton, but one thing had settled in his mind with terrible clarity. Whatever that creature was, whatever it had done, Emily was better. And once a man sees a miracle, he can talk himself into believing he deserves more. Part 3. Brad didn't intend to let the creature stay in Emily's room. That was the first lie he told himself the next morning. He woke stiff and sore on the couch, the remote wedged under his shoulder, one arm numb from sleeping on it. His mind resurfaced piece by piece, and with it came the memory of the egg, the creature, and the way Emily had stood in the kitchen at sunrise asking for pancakes like a perfectly healthy child. When he saw her coming down the stairs, light on her feet, steady, with none of the hesitant grip on the railing, his throat tightened so sharply he had to turn away under the pretense of checking the frying pan.
I'm really hungry,
she said, swinging into the chair at the table.
Do we still have the syrup with the bear on it?
He stared at her. She stared back. He forced his voice steady.
Yeah, we've got plenty.
He made her two pancakes, and she finished every bite.
See?
She said, cheerful and oblivious.
Told you I felt good.
Brad nodded slowly, setting his mug down with both hands so he didn't drop it.
Yeah, you sure did.
In the doorway, the creature watched them. It sat half in shadow, its slick grayish skin glistening faintly. It moved only to adjust its posture, little front flippers dragging across the carpet in soft, wet strokes. Its eyes never left Emily. When he carried her plate to the sink, Brad finally approached it with cautious steps.
Hey,
he murmured, as if talking to a stray dog he wasn't sure wouldn't bite.
You stay right there. We're getting dressed, then we're going to the hospital, okay? They need to see she's doing better.
The creature blinked once, slowly, as if acknowledging him. And then, unbelievably, it pulled itself back towards Emily's feet.
Can it come?
She asked. No, Brad said immediately. Absolutely not. I'm not walking that thing into a hospital. We don't even know what it is. Emily's face fell. The creature pressed its damp head against her ankle, and Brad felt a cold pinch of something like jealousy. A strange sensation, to envy a thing that shouldn't exist. It'll be here when we get back, he said more softly. She nodded, mollified. He hoped she wouldn't notice the lie he was already preparing to tell the doctors. The hospital staff didn't know what to do with her. Her blood counts were normal, her markers undetectable, her energy level inexplicably high. Sarah showed up midway through the appointment, her scrubs wrinkled and her hair pulled into a lopsided bun, the look she wore on days she'd been called in early and couldn't say no. Sarah's shoes squeaked faintly on the linoleum as she stepped into the hallway, her badge still clipped crookedly to her scrubs. Her eyes darted toward the exam room where Emily sat, swinging her legs, bright-eyed and alert in a way she had no business being.
What happened?
She demanded in a low voice.
I just got her released early, Brad. Why is Emily back again? What's wrong?
Brad swallowed. He didn't trust his voice enough to invent anything. Not yet. Nothing's wrong, he said quietly. That's what happened. Sarah stared at him, waiting for him to continue. Something's changed, he said. Emily's better. Sarah blinked at him once, twice. A muscle in her jaw twitched.
Better how?
She asked.
As in, a good day? Less pain? Or, Brad, what are you saying?
He gestured helplessly toward the exam room. Look at her. She walked in here without help. She ate breakfast. She says she feels normal.
Normal?
Sarah echoed, barely above a whisper.
That's not possible. She was vomiting last night. She... Brad, don't do this. Don't give me hope for nothing.
I'm not, he said softly. You're seeing it yourself. Sarah stared at him the way people look at a bridge after a hurricane, testing the supports, wondering whether any of it could still be trusted.
You better not be lying to me,
she whispered.
Not about this.
He thought about elaborating, pulling her aside into a hallway and telling her about his mysterious discovery, the creature, and that he suspected it had something to do with all of this. But he didn't tell her the truth. After all, he barely understood it himself. Sarah remained stunned and didn't say anything at first. Then she asked,
Where is she? Can I see her?
Of course. She's in exam room 3. She brushed past him and slipped back into the exam room, pushing the curtain aside with a trembling hand. Brad followed her just far enough to see the way her face changed. Emily looked up from the exam table, cheeks bright, legs swinging, chatting with the nurse about the stickers she wanted afterward. Her voice was clear, steady and free of strain. Sarah froze. Her eyes swept over Emily with a mother's meticulous precision, taking in color, posture, muscle tone, the absence of pain in her expression. She placed a hand against Emily's forehead, then her cheek, then the back of her neck. Emily giggled at the attention. Sarah didn't giggle back. Her breath hitched, and she pressed her fingers to her lips as though holding something in. Relief, disbelief, a kind of fragile joy that came with a warning label. Don't trust this. Don't break in front of them.
Mommy, what's wrong?
Emily asked. Sarah shook her head quickly.
Nothing, sweetheart. Nothing at all.
Her voice cracked midway through. She swallowed hard and steadied it.
You look good. Really good.
Brad could see her struggling to hold back tears. She smoothed Emily's hair, lingering a moment longer than necessary, then stepped back before she melted there in front of everyone.
I have to get back.
she said quietly to Brad, straightening her badge with shaking fingers.
They're short-staffed today, and I'm already past my break, but I want to see her again. I need to.
You will, Brad said. I promise.
Can you bring her to my place when I'm done here? I'll call you.
Yes, Sarah, Brad said. That's fine.
Sarah exhaled and nodded. Then she turned and hurried down the hallway, as though if she slowed down even a little, the weight of what she'd just seen might crush her. That night, after he brought Emily back to Sarah's, Brad returned to his house, still wearing the same clothes he'd woken in. He didn't bother turning on the TV or the kitchen light. He headed straight upstairs. The creature was on the rug again, exactly where he'd left it, but something had changed. It wasn't just wriggling or twitching. It was now practicing movement, turning with intention, small, coordinated rolls, as if its muscles were waking up, learning its body like a child learns balance. Brad crouched down, studying it. Its glossy eyes lifted to his, unblinking.
You did something, he murmured. You made her better.
The creature clicked softly, a tone Brad could almost imagine as acknowledgement or agreement. Before he could ponder it further, his phone buzzed. He pulled it out. He'd received a text from his colleague Nate Harris. Nate wasn't just some face in the break room. He and Brad had worked side by side on late shifts for years, loading docks, inventory runs, sweating through company team-building weekends that were little more than trust exercises in the woods. They'd shared enough bad coffee and black humor to become something close to friends. Nate knew all about Emily's leukemia and about Brad's divorce. And Brad knew all about Nate's mother, how the ALS she'd been afflicted with had hollowed her voice, then her strength, then almost everything else. Nate talked about her the same way Brad talked about Emily when he was overwhelmed, quietly and with a cracked kind of pride. Brad opened the message. Nate, 9:17 p.m.
Mom's taking a bad turn tonight. Real bad. They're saying she's got a week, maybe two, tops. I don't know what to do, man.
Brad exhaled slowly. His first instinct was to type something automatic.
I'm sorry, or I'm here if you need anything.
But the words didn't come. His thumbs hovered over the keys. He pictured Nate pacing a dim hospital room, looking through the blinds the same way Brad had looked through them 1,000 times. He pictured the woman he'd met twice at company barbecues, frail, soft-spoken, hands shaking even as she tried to pass out paper plates. Then he thought of Emily this morning, bright-eyed, pink-cheeked, and laughing. A miracle he couldn't explain. A new message appeared. Nate, 9:19 p.m.
I don't know if I can handle this, man. I'm out of options. I think this might be the end for her. Got a minute to talk?
Brad stared at the screen. His first instinct was to make a quick call, offer his condolences and the usual expected platitudes, and let Nate vent if that's what he needed. His second thought was to tell Nate the truth, that he'd found something impossible. Something he had no right to trust, but for some reason did. The thoughts lingered.
What if it works again? What if Emily wasn't a fluke? What if the creature can help someone else? What if Brad could actually make a difference? Maybe even profit from it?
The stack of unopened bills on the kitchen counter surfaced in his mind, and Brad swallowed hard. He typed a response.
I have an idea. I want to show you something that I think can help. It worked for Emily, and it could help your mother, too. Come by tomorrow night, just you and your mom. Don't tell anyone yet.
He stared at the message before hitting send. When he finally did, Nate replied almost instantly.
Nate. Anything. Thank you. Seriously, Brad. Thank you. I'm glad to hear Emily's better. That's amazing. See you tomorrow. Thanks again.
Brad lowered the phone, Behind him, the creature shifted, a faint ripple moving down its flank. It clicked again, one soft curved note, almost curious, knowing. Brad felt the hair rise on the back of his neck, as if the creature understood exactly the kind of thoughts taking shape in his mind. The following evening, Brad cleaned the garage, laid down an old blanket in the corner, and moved the space heater nearby. He even rolled up the rug to avoid stains, though he didn't know why. Some reflexive attempt to make the place look less menacing, maybe. Then he brought the creature downstairs and set it gently onto the blanket. Its skin was warmer than before, its body slightly larger. Its movements were more intentional. It was no longer cute. He stood over it, palms sweating, and told himself he was still doing the right thing. "It's just Nate's mom," he whispered. "Just this once, for her." But it was never going to be just once. He knew that already. Nate brought his mother after dark. She was a frail shape in a wheelchair, breathing shallowly, wrapped in a shawl that looked older than both men combined. Brad swallowed as he opened the garage door. "Just trust me," he said. "No phones, no pictures, and promise me you're not going to freak out." Nate looked uncertain at first, but nodded quickly. He looked 10 years older than he had at work earlier that week. "What do we do?" he asked. That's when Brad gestured toward the creature curled up on the blanket, and they both froze. It was bigger now, no longer fetus-like, but more seal-shaped, its head lifting with calm precision. Its eyes reflected the overhead bulb, twin glints of unblinking awareness.
"What the hell is that? Nate whispered.
"The cure," Brad said before he could stop himself. The word tasted dangerous, addictive. Nate wheeled his mother closer, hesitation etched in every line of her face.
Are you sure?" he asked.
"No, not even close," Brad thought. But all the same, he heard himself say,
"Yes."
And that single word changed everything. When Nate's mother first touched the creature, nothing happened at first. Then her entire body relaxed, and a long breath escaped her. A breath so deep and full it didn't seem possible for someone in her condition. Next, her eyes opened, wider, and her fingers stopped trembling.
"Oh,"
she whispered, small and astonished.
"I haven't felt this light in years."
Nate stared, tears forming instantly.
"Mom? Mom?"
She smiled up at him.
I'm not hurting."
It was real. Another miracle. Brad felt the thrill crawl up his spine, electric and intoxicating. Brad didn't know how or why any of this was happening. All he knew was that he'd seen the impossible twice now, and twice is more than enough to make a man a believer. Part 4. Nate's mother walked out of Brad's garage under her own power for the first time in months. That alone should have terrified him. Instead, Brad watched her take those unsteady, miraculous steps with the same tightening in his chest he'd felt when Emily first stood up without wobbling. That small, traitorous swell of hope. The one thing he'd run out of months ago. The one thing he couldn't afford to question. He kept waiting for the fear to catch up. It never did. Nate hugged him twice, choking out words Brad barely heard.
"Man, I owe you everything. I don't... How did you... What is that thing?"
Brad said what felt easy and practical.
"You don't want to know," he replied. "Just be grateful."
And Nate was. The trouble is, grateful people talk. They share their miracles. Grateful people bring more desperate souls to the doorstep of the man capable of conjuring the impossible when all other options have been exhausted. This was just the beginning. The next few nights blurred together. A man with pancreatic cancer, a teenage girl with cystic fibrosis, a veteran whose spine was fused from a fall, his high school friend Kayla's brother suffering from a terminal lung condition. Each one touched the creature, and each one recovered. All the while, the creature grew. Not grotesquely or suddenly, nothing like you'd expect in a horror movie, but in subtle increments that Brad couldn't ignore. The slick folds of its body seemed denser by the day, its flipper-like limbs thicker and more capable. Its eyes had taken on a reflective sheen, like oil atop deep water. Sometimes it communicated in soft, oscillating clicks that Brad was no closer to understanding than when everything started. Brad pretended not to notice the intelligence forming behind the sounds. He pretended even harder not to notice the way the creature looked almost pleased after each contact, its skin warmer, its movements sharper, as if each healing fed something in it, strengthened something he didn't understand. He told himself it didn't matter. Emily was better. The others were better. That made him better. He hadn't felt this important in years. And self-worth is an easy drug to overdose on. He made his first $500 on a single visit from a trucker whose wife waited in a rusted blue sedan at the curb, praying under her breath. Brad didn't ask for money, but accepted it when the man pressed folded bills into his hand. Cash formed a quiet, guilty pile in Brad's kitchen drawer. Kayla, from one of the oncology wards, paid him in gift cards. A local pastor insisted on bringing cash and a ham. A dentist with rheumatoid arthritis asked no questions and gave him $1,200 in an envelope. "People deserve hope," Brad muttered each night as he locked the garage. "And I deserve a break." These were the phrases that let him sleep. They didn't last. The first sign of impending disaster arrived via a phone call 6 days after Nate's mother had first visited. Brad was reheating leftovers in the microwave, staring at the rotating bowl like he was hypnotized when his phone buzzed on the counter. "Nate, 7:04 p.m.
"Mom's in the ER. Call me."
Brad frowned, confused, but he wasn't alarmed. Not yet. He stepped into the hallway and dialed. Nate answered on the first ring.
"She collapsed,"
he said.
"It came out of nowhere. 1 minute she was folding laundry, the next she was on the floor."
Brad swallowed. "A seizure?"
"No,"
Nate said shakily.
"Worse. Everything's shutting down. They don't know what's happening. Brad, she looks worse than before, like something's draining her. Please tell me what you did, what that thing did."
The words hit harder than they should have.
Is she alive?" Brad asked.
"For now. They've got her on monitors, fluids, everything."
Then in a smaller voice he asked,
"Did you know this might happen?"
"No," Brad whispered. "No, I swear I didn't."
A nurse pulled Nate away from the phone. Brad heard muted voices, then the line went dead. He stared at the screen. The microwave beeped behind him, loud and mocking. And for the first time since that creature touched Emily, something cold slipped between Brad's ribs. The second call came in an hour later, not from Nate, but from Kayla. She could barely speak between sobs.
"My brother can't breathe,"
she choked out.
"He got better for 2 days. He said he felt strong again, and then he just fell apart. He can't lift his arms. He's losing weight by the hour. Brad, he looks gray. What did that thing do to him?"
Brad's mouth opened. Nothing came out. Kayla pressed on.
"You told me you'd help him."
I tried, Brad stammered. "I thought I was. I didn't know."
She hung up. He didn't blame her. He stopped answering messages after that, but they kept coming. Dozens of them, all in the same tone. Help. Please. Something's wrong. This is worse. Tell us what you did. Each message shuddered through him like a fresh blow. He sat motionless at the kitchen table until sunrise, staring at the wood grain like answers might eventually bloom from it. But the only answers waiting for him came from outside his own four walls. The news broke the next morning. Brad watched the report on his laptop, hunched over with the blinds half closed, as though hiding from the truth might keep it smaller. Hospitals across three states were dealing with sudden, unexplained collapses. All the same symptoms, all equally baffling. The anchor used words like systematic deterioration, organ compromise, neurological shutdown. No one could pinpoint a cause. There was no infection present and no toxin. No consistent medical factor. Except one. Every victim had recently, within days, experienced what doctors were calling spontaneous remission events. Remission. Recovery. Miracle cures. Him. Every single person Brad had helped, and countless others he'd never even met but whose families had whispered and posted and passed along rumors, was now deteriorating faster than he could comprehend. The news station cut to a map of the U.S., clusters of red dots spread outward like blood through gauze. He counted the cities, recognizing several. His stomach pitched. And then a second map appeared. This one wasn't domestic, it was global. More dots, more clusters, more strange cases reported in countries with names he couldn't pronounce. Whatever happened here wasn't happening only here. And the anchor said something that stopped his breath cold.
Though unconfirmed, several reports suggest sightings of small seal-like animals near many of the earliest clusters. Ecologists and wildlife officials are investigating.
Brad didn't blink nor move. He struggled to breathe, because the creature in his garage, his secret, his miracle, hadn't been a one-of-a-kind discovery. It was one of many, and all of them were waking up. When Brad opened the garage door, the creature looked different. Bigger, longer, limbs thicker, eyes deeper. It tilted its head toward him slowly. Calm, observant, and self-aware. Its skin rippled with a new strength, and in that moment, Brad understood with terrible clarity that it wasn't healing anyone. It never had. It had been feeding. Every touch, every miracle, every moment of hope had been a taste, a connection. And now that it had fed, it was growing. They all were. Across the country and the world, in every forest, every river, every unsuspecting home like his. Brad staggered back and felt the weight of what he'd done hit him fully. The creature blinked slowly, and Brad saw, in its unblinking black eyes, something that looked an awful lot like hunger.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something, but I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people, it involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public will be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.
Part 5. The call came from Sarah at 2:41 a.m. Brad had been sitting in the dark, on the living room floor back against the couch, every muscle wound so tight he felt brittle. He watched the same patch of wall for hours, not really seeing it. He didn't want the phone to ring, but sooner or later he knew it would. When the screen lit up, he closed his eyes before answering. "Yeah," he whispered. Sarah didn't bother saying hello.
"Something's wrong,"
she said. He felt himself go weightless. "What do you mean?" he asked carefully, though somewhere deep down, somewhere he didn't want to acknowledge, he already knew.
"She woke up screaming,"
Sarah said,
"clutching her stomach. Said it felt like something inside her was pulling hard, like it was trying to take something out of her."
Brad's heart thudded once, dull and heavy. "I'm coming," he said.
"Hurry."
The line clicked dead. Brad sat still for one long breath, then another. He felt paralyzed. He knew what this was. He had seen it already, in the other family's frantic messages, and yet he held on to one last hope, thin and quivering, that maybe Emily would be different. She wasn't. That was the truth he'd been running from since the moment she first touched the creature. He pushed himself off the floor, grabbed his keys, and ran. The drive to Sarah's duplex was a blur of red lights he ignored and empty roads he barely registered. The world outside felt hollow and distant, as if his thoughts were trapped inside a thick shell he couldn't break. How ironic, he thought. When he reached the house, he didn't knock. He pushed the door open and found Sarah pacing the living room with Emily, cradled in her arms. Emily looked wrong. She wasn't pale, bruised, or feverish, not yet, but she looked dimmed, like someone had blown out half the candles inside her and hadn't bothered to relight them. Her eyes blinked open when she heard him.
"Daddy,"
she whispered. Her voice barely carried. Brad crossed the room in three steps.
"What's happening?"
Sarah demanded, her voice cracked from fear.
"She was doing so well, better than she has in months. What did you do?"
Brad swallowed hard. He couldn't answer, not honestly, not fully, not without tearing apart the last thread of shared trust between them. But even the silence had edges sharp enough to cut.
"You know something,"
she said, stepping back.
"I can see it. Tell me."
He opened his mouth, but the words clung to the roof of his mouth, heavy and wet. There was no version he could shape that wouldn't sound insane. Emily whimpered, curling toward him.
"Hurts."
Brad knelt beside her. "Where?" he asked softly. She pointed weakly to her chest.
"Here and here."
Her hand drifted to her abdomen.
"And it feels like someone's tugging on me."
Brad felt his stomach drop away. That was the exact phrase Kayla had used, and Nate, and half the other desperate families. A connection, a tether, something drawing from them over distance, like a feeding tube threaded through the fabric of their being. Brad took Emily into his arms, feeling how light she'd become again. Not the good kind of lightness, the energized kind he'd seen just days ago, but the brittle, failing kind that reminded him far too much of sterile beds and IV poles. Her cheek pressed against his shoulder.
"Daddy,"
she murmured.
"Make it stop."
His eyes burned. "I will," he whispered. "I promise." But promises were cheap. They dissolved under pressure, and he was out of lies. After Emily drifted into a fitful sleep, Sarah confronted him again in the kitchen.
"I'm not blind,"
she said, keeping her voice low.
"Something happened, something you let happen. She was better overnight, and now this. Brad, for God's sake, tell me."
Her eyes glistened with a fear Brad recognized too well. The fear of a parent who sees the world gearing up to take their child again. Brad pressed his palms against the counter,
I found something, he said finally. His voice felt thin, like an instrument stretched too tight. In the woods. Sarah stared at him.
A mushroom? Some herbal...
No, Brad said. Nothing like that. He swallowed. It was an egg. She blinked, then blinked again.
An egg?
Yes.
From what?
Brad hesitated. I don't know. Sarah's face paled. She took a slow step backward.
Tell me you didn't give her something you found in the woods.
I didn't give it to her, he said quickly. It hatched on its own. She found it.
And you let it touch her?
I didn't. He stopped. He couldn't finish the sentence without lying. Sarah stared at him like he'd become someone she didn't recognize.
Where is it now?
Brad hesitated.
Brad,
she said.
Where?
In the garage, he said quietly. Sarah's expression shifted from disbelief to cold horror.
What?
She whispered.
Did you bring into our lives?
He couldn't answer. Not before she turned away from him and wiped at her eyes. Not before she said,
you need to fix this.
He returned home before dawn, just as the horizon began to smolder gold behind the trees, and opened the garage door slowly. The creature was awake. Not newborn awake, wiggling and clicking its soft sounds, but overwhelmingly aware. Its body was larger now, lengthened, the proportions shifting from infantile to juvenile. The slick skin had taken on a deeper hue, almost bluish black, patterned faintly with veins that pulsed in slow intervals. Its flippers had thickened, its neck had elongated, its eyes had lost some of their innocence. It regarded him with a calm, predatory intelligence that made his breath catch. Something in the air felt charged, like the moment before a storm breaks. You need to release her, Brad said. His voice trembled. He didn't know how else to speak to it. He didn't know if it could understand. But he had to try. You're killing her. You're killing all of them. You have to stop. The creature blinked once, a long, deliberate, knowing blink. Then its mouth opened slightly, releasing a breathy exhale. A sound that felt eerily like disappointment. Brad stepped closer. Let her go, he whispered. Take whatever you took from the others, just not her, not my daughter. The creature's skin rippled, seemingly pressing outward from deep within, as though something inside it was expanding and strengthening. It lifted one flipper, not toward him, but toward the garage door window. Toward the outside world. Brad followed its gesture. In the distance, a siren wailed, then another, then three more in quick succession. His phone vibrated in his pocket. All at once, he received dozens of notifications, news alerts, more collapses, more inexplicable failings, more deaths. Not just in his town, not just in his state. Everywhere. The creature lowered its flipper. Brad felt something cold slide through him as the truth came together with horrifying clarity. Emily wasn't special. She wasn't singled out. She was connected, bound, claimed, just like all the others. And whatever this thing was, whatever species it belonged to, it wasn't done. Not even close. Part 6. Emily did not improve. Brad had hoped, prayed in some quiet, wounded way he hadn't prayed since he was a child, that the creature might give back whatever it had taken, even if begrudgingly, even if only because he stood there begging for his daughter's life with the kind of desperation that strips a man down to the structural beams. He hoped that beneath its hunger and animalistic, predatory intent, that the creature had more compassion than a simple beast. But when he left the garage and drove back to Sarah's place that morning, he found Emily curled on the couch, knees to her chest, arms trembling as she held herself together. Sarah sat behind her, rubbing slow circles on her back. Her eyes lifted when Brad entered. They were red, dry, and hollow.
"She's getting worse,"
Sarah said. There was no accusation in her tone this time, only cold fact. Brad knelt beside Emily.
"Hey,"
he whispered.
"Sweetheart, I'm here."
Emily blinked up at him, her lashes stuck together in little clumps. Her breathing was shallow and too quick.
"Daddy?"
Her voice came out like a thread.
"It hurts."
"Where?"
he asked, though he already knew. She placed a trembling hand over her sternum.
"Inside,"
she whispered.
"It's pulling harder now, like it found something, and it's taking it now."
She winced.
"It wants to eat."
Her phrasing struck him cleanly enough to stagger him. He covered her hand with his own.
"It's going to be okay," he whispered.
"Don't lie,"
she murmured. Brad's throat closed. He kissed her forehead and tasted salt. He carried her to the car when her legs gave out. Sarah rode in the back with her, guiding her head against her lap, murmuring soft reassurances that held neither certainty nor hope. Brad drove without looking at the speedometer. Stop signs blurred, traffic lights meant nothing. Other drivers honked once, twice, then were gone. They reached the emergency entrance as two nurses wheeled out a gurney. Emily's fingers slipped from Brad's sleeve as they transferred her. He tried not to lose composure. He failed. They whisked her through the double doors plastered with fading posters about flu vaccines and seasonal allergies, mundane warnings in a world now quietly devouring itself. A doctor came out 10 minutes later. He wasn't someone Brad knew. He was middle-aged with a calm voice and eyes too understanding.
"She's crashing," the doctor said, as if her father didn't already know. "We're doing everything we can, but whatever this is," his jaw tightened. "Her organs are failing in a pattern we've never seen. It's almost like something is draining her at a systematic level." Sarah covered her mouth. Brad stared straight through the man.
"Can she hear us?"
he asked.
"For now."
Those two words undid him. She was still conscious when they entered the room. Barely. Machines beeped in staggered rhythms around her. IV lines traced pale arcs from her arms. She looked impossibly small amid the sterile chaos. Brad moved to her side. His hands shook as he took hers. Emily's eyelids fluttered open.
"Daddy?"
The whisper was almost nothing.
"Is it still there?"
He swallowed. He couldn't bring himself to lie again.
"Yes," he whispered. "But I'm here. You're not alone."
She blinked slowly, as though each movement took tremendous effort.
"Can you turn it off?"
she asked.
"The pulling?"
Brad's vision blurred.
"I would," he said. "I swear I would."
Emily breathed out softly, a sound like relief or resignation.
"That's okay,"
she said.
"It's not your fault."
Brad shook his head, gripping her hand harder.
"It is,"
he whispered.
"It is, sweetheart. I didn't understand. I should have never brought it home. I should have never let you near it."
Emily's lips curved slightly, almost a smile, almost forgiveness.
"You tried,"
she breathed.
"You were scared, I know."
Her voice grew faint.
"And I'm not scared now."
Brad pressed his forehead to her knuckles and gently kissed her hand.
"I love you, Emmy,"
he whispered.
"I love."
Her breath shuddered.
"You too."
Her hand went loose in his. The machines screamed. Sarah sobbed.
A nurse hurried in. Brad didn't stand. He couldn't. He stayed bent over his daughter's still hand until someone finally touched his shoulder. He didn't respond. Emily was gone. The creature knew. He didn't know how, but he felt it. Hours later, after signing papers with a hand that barely functioned, after Sarah asked him, quietly, without anger, to leave her house, after driving home on autopilot without turning on the headlights, Brad walked into his garage again. The creature was standing now. Its four limbs no longer mere flippers, supported its length with unnerving grace. Its skin had darkened to a mottled charcoal blue, glossy and firm. Its neck was longer, its head more defined. The eyes, still black and unblinking, held something unmistakably brimming with awareness. And when it saw him, it inhaled, a slow, deep breath that made its chest widen, not from hunger, but from satisfaction. Brad stumbled backward. "You killed her," he whispered. It tilted its head, a gesture so eerily human that Brad felt bile rise in his throat. The creature's skin rippled again, a subtle, undulating motion, as though new layers of muscle were knitting beneath the surface. Brad reached blindly for a tire iron. He didn't think, he didn't analyze, he simply swung. The metal connected. The creature thrashed, a shrill sound tearing from its throat. And at that exact moment, Brad felt something inside his ribs twist sharply. Emotionally, psychically, as though the scream had been aimed at him. He staggered, dropping the iron. When he looked up, the creature was crawling toward the open garage door with a speed it hadn't possessed a day earlier. It slithered across the concrete, claws, actual claws now, scraping faintly, and slipped into the darkness outside. It was gone. It didn't fear him. It didn't need him. He had served his purpose. The news broke worldwide over the next 48 hours of collapses in Europe. Sudden systemic failures in Asia. Unexplained neurological shutdowns in South America. There were clusters on every continent. Dozens of videos showed creatures, some small and newborn, others lanky and half-matured, emerging from forests, from lakes, from abandoned sheds, from storm drains. Some crawled, some walked, some stood upright. All moved with the same unsettling purpose. Satellite footage revealed glowing thermal signatures beneath wilderness regions across the globe, hundreds of them, pulsing in unison, brightening as though something beneath the Earth's surface was coming alive. Experts called it a coordinated biological awakening. Brad knew better. He knew exactly what it was. They were feeding. Feeding from afar, through the threads they'd sown into millions of people. And they were growing, fast. They had tasted human potential, human wellness, human life. And they would never let go. Brad didn't sleep for 3 days. On the fourth day, he went to the small clearing behind the abandoned train depot on the outskirts of town, the one place he and Emily used to walk when she felt well enough. The leaves rustled gently. The wind smelled like rain. If he closed his eyes, he could pretend the world wasn't ending. But when he opened them, he saw what had been hiding between the trees. Dozens of them. Some small, some large, all breathing in slow, rhythmic synchronization. Some turned their heads when they saw him, black eyes reflecting the dim gray sky. They did not approach, nor did they flee. They simply watched. Brad sank to his knees as a breeze drifted through the clearing, bending grass blades carrying faint clicking sounds on the wind. Brad pressed his palms to his face and wept. He wanted to scream. He wanted forgiveness. He wanted his daughter back. But he knew none of those things were coming. All that remained was a single terrible certainty. He hadn't discovered a miracle. He hadn't saved his daughter. He had been the first volunteer in a global harvest. And now the benefactors, those silent, tireless creatures, were claiming what they believed was theirs. He hadn't discovered a miracle. He had delivered his own daughter into the waiting maw of a ruthless predator. Humanity had stepped into their open mouths willingly. Some gifts, Brad realized far too late, only look like mercy.
That was Benefactor by Craig Groeschek, performed by Nicholas Goroff, with featured performances by Katie Otten and sound design by Aaron Sawicki. A story about hope misplaced, about a father's love, a child's trust, and the terrible places desperation can take us. We like to believe we'd recognize danger when it's right in front of us. But when fear gnaws at the edges of our lives, when the people we love are slipping away, anything warm can feel like salvation, even when it's only waiting to take something back. And tonight's author is more than just a storyteller. Craig Groeschek is the creator of this very program, Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and the founder of the original YouTube channel that helped ignite a new era of horror audio online. His work has shaped the foundation of what we do here and continues to fuel new nightmares week after week. If you'd like to explore more of Craig's writing, including dozens of stories you won't hear anywhere else, visit our sister site, creepypastastories.com, where his catalog is available to read for free, along with tales from hundreds of other dark-minded creatives. And remember, beginning in the coming weeks, we'll be showcasing our Evil Idol Round 2 contestants in brand new, fully immersive full-cast productions right here on this program. You won't want to miss their debut performances. Now, before we dim the lights entirely tonight, a few final reminders. If you enjoyed your time with us, or if tonight's story made you look twice at anything warm, glowing, or moving just a bit too quietly, please follow this show on your podcast platform of choice. Your reviews and ratings help new listeners find us and help keep these stories coming. Be sure to drop by our YouTube channel for weekly horror performances, Evil Idol Showdown rounds, and new content that arrives with surprising regularity, usually right when you've convinced yourself it's safe to sleep again. Subscribe, click the bell, and join the audience deciding who will be crowned the next great voice of fear. If you want ad-free episodes, early access, and exclusive bonus stories, join us at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com. Memberships start at $7.99 with annual discounts available and unlock a growing treasury of darkness. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, and TikTok for updates, behind-the-scenes content, contests, and more. It's the easiest way to stay connected and make sure your nightmares never run out of fuel. And with that, listener, our time together draws to a close. May your hopes be honest, may your comforts be real, and may nothing strange ever hatch in the places where you feel safest. Until next time, turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Sweet dreams, listener. Sweet dreams.